Hello, listener. My name is Jason Bateman. I am one of three hosts on SmartLess. The other two are late, as they are one to do. I am prompt, and I am also a fan of stone fruit. You might not know what stone fruit is, but it is a peach, a plum, a cherry, a nectarine, things with stones in the middle of it. And right now, listener, they're glorious, and they are well in stock at your local market. You think I'm kidding? But the serenity in my voice right now is prompted by the incredible fleshy stone fruits I've had in the last half hour. Welcome to SmartLess. SmartLess.
SmartLess. SmartLess. Go ahead, Sean.
I was just going to ask you, so you listen to Italian rap?
Sure.
And that's like a real thing.
Yeah, I listen to Italian rap. I listen to French rap.
Well, because you can understand French, but I don't think you speak Italian.
I don't speak Italian. I wish I did.
So why? What's the draw?
The draw is it's about a lifestyle. Well, hip-hop, no matter where it is about a lifestyle, Sean, so cool it. And
yeah, I can tell by the way you look that you understand that.
Put it this way. You see me on a scooter.
Yeah.
In downtown Naples, rolling with my crew. Can I ask you an honest question?
Ask me anything you want. My hair, my hat. I always wear a hat.
No, it was about me.
Oh, sorry.
How would I look with a neck tattoo?
To me, no different than you look now.
No different. Yeah. Jason, we're rolling.
Sorry. That was a long walk.
I guess so, from one wing to the other.
We're rolling.
We're rolling right now?
You're on the show right now, Jason.
Yeah, you're a little late, Jason. Well, do you ever wear like long sleeve shirts? You're always in a t-shirt, always, every 24 hours a day.
I'm in a climate-controlled house. You know, do you not have climate? What's going on? Are you just exposed to the elements?
We can be in a world with, Thoreau could be the third leg on this tripod, and we'd have to deal with no sleeves at all. So,
can you imagine? Jason, now, are you having a coffee? Is that what your beverage is?
Yeah, and I think it's a little late for the coffee. I get more irritable than usual.
What?
The later I drink coffee, but yep. I'm going to try to...
And it's late right now.
I know. And I get all sweaty.
Well, we have a guest here.
Wait a second, we're rolling?
Yeah, we got a guest here.
You guys.
Our guest is comes. So, I don't know, it's tough to describe our guest because this person does so many things. Mm-hmm. Our guest started... on a show that might be close to your heart. I'm not sure. A show called Hillside. Four seasons.
Blues? Hillside Blues?
Four seasons on Hillside. I think in this country it was called 15. It's one of those shows that had different names in different countries.
But American person?
Well, this person is a person is not an American person. This is a person who lives in America. But this is a person who, well, strangely enough, comes from just north of the border, where I'm from.
Oh, so it's one of three people.
So this person's an entrepreneur.
Oh.
This person is a visionary.
Oh, boy.
Is a business visionary. He's got his hands in mobile phones. He's got his hands in the booze industry. He's now got his hands in Welsh football. This is a guy.
Oh, for God's sake!
This is America Ryan loves, Reynolds,
and this is your buddy Ryan.
Oh my God!
Look at him!
Look at him!
He's alive.
I hadn't even gotten to his looks yet. He is too hot for a podcast. It's Ryan Reynolds.
I wore sleeves today, guys.
Wait, now Ryan. Yeah. In week one of this COVID baby we call SmartLess. I think I sent you a text that said, listen, I know you love to do podcasts, so we're happy to accommodate you. It was a sarcastic, sort of passive-aggressive pitch. Never heard back from you.
Yeah, we're in the middle of a fucking pandemic, Bateman. I was battening down the hatches.
Appropriate response. Appropriate response.
By the way, I'm still hung up on Hillside Blues, picturing me and Dennis Franz as a couple of angsty teenagers going through puberty together.
don't skirt the issue here. I just get a no response. But you say yes to Arnett. You and I are so much closer than fucking Will and you.
I know. Let me reset the table here. Can I reset the table?
Really? Yeah.
This will be quick.
It better prop me back up.
You guys just wait. I have never been in a room, virtual or otherwise, with three people.
This is going to hurt.
Who have at many points in my life caused me to fall over weeping with laughter. This is one of the, this is a moment.
We're off to a great start.
Each one of
you guys. Take your time.
That's very nice.
Have made a adult diaper requisite wardrobe for me to watch.
Go around the table. Go around the table. Go around the table.
Guys, no, truly.
Let him finish.
Bateman was the first person when I moved to Los Angeles that was kind to me, that I found that was kind. I was 18 years old. Yeah. And I had just hairless, freshly waxed, eyebrows were exquisite, and got to Los Angeles. I ended up in this manager's office that would never in a million years take me, but in walks Jason Bateman, and just out of nowhere, asked me where I'm from and what I'm doing here.
I think I said, hey, friend. Yeah. Probably started with, hey, friend.
He could see my soul visibly exiting my body.
He always talks to wandering teens. That's always been one of his
hallmarks. It really is the hallmark of a truly dynamic predator.
Hey, hairless, vulnerable, innocent-looking friend.
Come this way.
What brings you to the office?
You look like you could use a ride.
But he was, he did not drive a panel van, nor did he offer me any candy whatsoever.
So Bateman was kind to you. So Bateman spoke to you, and you knew him at that point from all his,
course,
from the Teen Wolves.
Jason Bateman.
It's Jason Bateman.
Ryan, did you move out here cold? I mean, did you have a reason to move out, or did you just move out to be an actor?
He was coming off Hillside, otherwise known as 15.
Coming off Hillside Blues.
What is Hillside, and what is 15?
Me and Lawrence Pressman. You know, smashing it together. Just for throwing out all the fun, going deep cuts on the.
Now, listen, Ryan, do you remember the first time we met? I remember very well. The first time we met in person, do you remember?
Start to nod politely.
Where was that?
It was at a gym.
Oh, in Equinox in Santa Monica. Thank you very much.
Equinox in Santa Monica.
Yep.
And you know what my thought was? I was in there I was moving some weight around. And obviously, I'm no stranger to a gym, and we don't need to get into that.
I'll say.
And yeah.
Weight around. Why don't you shut the hell up?
So I'm in there, yeah. And I'm feeling kind of good about myself.
Sure, you are.
And old Brian Reynolds, as Dax likes to call him to his face, which always makes me laugh because it's just not funny. And I do it too. Ryan comes in, and I'm like, this motherfucker is so handsome, and he's so strong, and I look like it. I like. Pretty quickly, like, oh, I'm going to put these 20s down and I'm just going to leave.
He was actually only in ankle weights. Will was wearing nothing but ankle weights.
But, Ryan, what about my question? Did you move to L.A. to be, what was my question? Did you actually move because you had an offer for something, or did you move to start a career here?
No, I mean, I was working at Safeway grocery store at the time in Vancouver. I didn't even quit. I just left.
Went on break.
I'd gone to college, I'm not making this up, for 45 minutes. I walked in and I just went, nope. And I went right back, pulled one more all-night shift at Safeway, and then the next day just got in my car and drove to Los Angeles.
What department at Safeway?
Yeah, exactly. Were you checkout or were you box boy or?
No, I did train as a cashier, but I was actually stocking shelves midnight to 8 a.m. I was working a graveyard shift.
Wow.
Facing out all the growth, so everything is perfectly smooth and flat for the customer. Yeah. Make it.
Do you ever like just open a box of cereal and just house it when nobody was looking?
No, most of the time it's food fights. I mean, some of the people I worked with at Safeway, there's a graveyard shift at Safeway at 25th and Oak. They know who they are. Some of the funniest human beings
I've ever
been around.
Some big laughs. I bet you had some huge laughs. I'm not joking.
God.
Are you still friends with any of your coworkers there?
I don't keep in touch with men. I kept friends with a lot of people that I went to high school with, but like that was an odd group because we only saw each other in the pitch black midnight hours. So
all coked up and stacking.
Oh God, yeah, all glued up,
stacking and
now,
pricing.
So are you really still friends with even if you're friends with five friends from high school? I admire that. I wish I was better at that.
I'm still in touch with my high school girlfriend, who's now, you know, married with three kids. I'm in touch with one of my best friends, Peter Zerbinos, that I went to school with my whole life since Little League. I've basically known him.
Ryan, this is, be honest, and she won't hear this, high school girlfriend. Mm-hmm. How hard is she kicking herself right now? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think it's...
I think she married a surgeon. She's doing all right.
Oh, she married... Okay, yeah. That's
and
good.
She
That's...
herself is a prolific educator. She's doing really well. She's really barely...
Does the surgeon have a back on him like you do?
Yeah. Huh?
My God, yes. That guy had thighs like Earl Campbell. I mean, he was just an absolute shredder on the football field.
Did he steal her from you?
No, he did not. No. We were together in 10th grade and broke up in 11th grade. Yeah.
Huh.
And they got together after
relationships run hot in 10th.
Right? That was, sure do.
Yeah.
They sure do. I was too busy working with Dennis Franz.
Yeah. when you got here, tell us, because I love little origin stories like from actors, because I did the same thing. I just got my car. I'd never even been here before.
You'd never driven a car.
Yeah, hang on a second. What kind of car did you rock out here from, what was it,
Toyota
Illinois?
A Toyota Corolla.
Right.
And let me tell you something, really quick story. When I got the pilot of Will and Grace, they had a kickoff dinner, and I drove my Corolla, and the only place you could park it was to valet at this one restaurant. And I was so embarrassed because the window was out, the hubcap was missing. All that was disgusting. There was dents everywhere. And I made sure I got there before everybody else. I went in and had a dinner with the cast of Will and Grace and Jimmy Burrows and everybody. And I was so embarrassed. They didn't want them to see me get the valet when I got out. So I left early. I was like, guys, I'm sorry. I got to get up early. Bye. I got up to the valet.
Still
chewing. I'm waiting for my car. And one by one, it's taking forever. One by one, everybody else comes out. Now we're all standing in a line. And my fucking car pulls up. First one. And I go, what did you do to my car?
Wrong ticket.
First of all, it wasn't a Corolla. It was not a Toyota Corolla.
Sean, how quickly were you trying to pull off your coexist bumper? Because you've always... Because you believe...
coexist.
I drove a similar sensible sedan for years. Even after I had a TV show, I remember I kept my little Nissan Sentra and was just covered in rust. The hubcap, same thing. It wasn't even a car. It was just like millions of wasps fucking. Like this car was just like absolute like danger to
the bottom was out, and you just moved it with your feet like Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
So Ryan, so you move here. And you had done a show. You'd done a sort of like a YA show for a few years, and that was like your first big.
That's young
kind of,
adult for young adult. Wisconsin.
Young yep. adult, and then so you move here, and then you get Two Guys a Girl, originally known as Two Guys a Girl in a Pizza Place. That which
Correct, yeah.
they dropped the Pizza Place.
Great
moniker.
Show. Great show.
Great show. Oh, and I remember seeing you on that show. I remember auditioning for that show. I remember.
Come on.
I
did
swear
you get
God.
It? Did you
really?
Get it?
Yeah, I think I did get it. Yeah. I think we did. I forget how many seasons. Well, Ryan will tell you.
Yeah, I think 4.5 seasons.
Yeah, we did like 4 seasons ago. But Ryan, I remember how, and this is no joke, how funny you were. It was undeniable. You're such a funny.
I watched that show all the time. I thought you were hilarious.
The timing is like a Swiss watch.
His timing is impeccable.
Like a surgeon.
And here's what I want to know, Ryan. And the reason I bring this up is this. Because you've had, I think, a super interesting career. And I think that you've always, no matter what, you're always good in everything you do. And everybody does things that sometimes they don't, you know, I remember somebody describing a bad movie. You're like, well, I thought we were going over here. Oh, we're going over here. There are certain things that are out of your control. What you can control is you're always really, really good. And I've always thought you were super funny. For, like Bayman said, your timing is incredible. I feel like you are depriving the world of more just pure comedy. Look, I love seeing you in the action stuff. I love seeing you kick ass. And you do bring humor to those parts. But fuck, man, you would absolutely crush pure comedy. I think you're so fucking funny.
Where he's going with this is, please do another sitcom is where the question
is. Well, I would love to do another sitcom. Best job I've ever had in my life. I know
Best
everyone
job
here
ever.
Has had their,
yes.
you know, it's it really is the greatest job in the world.
Absolutely. Best.
Reasonable hours, live audience. You know, yeah. fun. You get to improv. I mean, the reason I moved to answer Sean's question, the reason I moved to Los Angeles was to join the Groundlings, which as a, you know, 18-year-old moron, I thought I could just show up there and they would put me on the stage. But you know,
and the Groundlings is like Second City. It's an improv kind of troupe. Yeah. We're Saturday Night Live.
Are you telling that to Ryan? He moved here to go.
No, I'm
to
telling
it. Why are you explaining it to him?
Did you get into Groundlings?
No, they were like, of course not. They were like, you got to get on in this class. You can't. I was like, I don't have enough money to sit in the class. I need to make some dough.
So you're in the class at Groundlings. How are you? What's your day job? Did you go to Albertsons and Vons and say, hey, I got a pretty good tenure.
Pretty swell CV going here, guys. I know how to work a manual forklift. Like no, I know how to close a wound with crazy glue like no one else.
What was your first day job out here?
I had no day job because I had no work permit. So I couldn't just walk into any place. And Will knows this. You can't just walk. So you need a work permit. So actually, I went looking for an agent to see if I could get sent out on a couple of auditions. And maybe that way they would sponsor me.
And that's when you met Teen Wolf too.
Well, that's exactly when I met Teen Wolf too.
Come on, really?
No, I'd just been rejected from the Groundlings. And the next day I met you. And then when I met Jason,
he got hit on by a weirdo.
No, he saw the look of pure, unadulterated panic in my face. And, you know, he asked whoever it was at that management company my number and left me a voice. This is back when you had answering machines. He left me an answering machine message just saying, hey, if you ever need anything, here's my number. I know I saw you.
Are you
terrified.
Serious? Is that
I
true?
I get arrested for that nowadays.
That is a random act of kindness right
That's
there,
so nice.
Unlike
That's
anything
very
else.
Sweet.
Jason.
But I've known this guy for a long time, and he's this is something he does, though. He doesn't like to admit it or talk about it, but Jason Bateman has got a wake of decades of random acts of kindness.
Oh, no, no. He has such a squishy center to him. And Ryan, I told this, what was it, a couple months ago, Sean, when I hurt my back and Jason showed up with like stuff for my, came to the house.
So nice. Yeah, so nice.
Just showed up unannounced and he's got like stuff for my back and all this kind of, and very, very sweet. So that doesn't surprise me. It does freak me out a little.
Freaks you out when I said, but the deal is I need to apply it. I'd like to.
This is
a back pad. And
I have like 25 things aching on me right now and wrong with my body, and Jason sent over Neosporin, but not in person.
Wow.
And a bill, an invoice.
How is your shoulder, Sean? I heard you have a rotten shoulder.
I do. How do you know that?
I listen to the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I have a bad shoulder. Mm-hmm.
I don't respond to Bateman's texts about it, but I listen to the podcast.
What about, now, what about, speaking of the pod, what about McElhaney and you owning football team?
Soccer.
Football club.
A Welsh football club.
Welsh. And you're going to do a documentary, a 2-year documentary, like following you guys around the trials and tribulations of propping this team up to the next level, yes?
To a certain degree, yeah. It's not so much about, we're not really centered in it as much. I mean, we're in it, but it's really about this community in this town.
Yeah.
You know, there's sort of, what I found interesting about this particular type of football team is that they're inextricably linked with the community. So when the football team is suffering, so is the community. When the community is suffering, so is the football team. So if you can find a way to kind of interconnect these two and raise them both up simultaneously, it's such an amazing, has amazing and a profound effect and a win-win for everybody. So we love the idea of, you know, sort of splitting our focus between community and the football club.
You've seen Sunderland Till I Die, obviously.
I think I've seen every single football documentary ever made at this
same,
point.
Same, same. And I think you always need a face, man. And like, nobody can replace your face, man. But,
God,
you know.
That was great. Do you see what he just did, guys?
Thank you.
I think Go ahead and rewind that, listener.
Yeah, that was an A-team reference as well.
Yeah.
Just, you and Rob are going to need somebody on the ground. And I've got a full-time job. All I'm saying is, imagine a guy.
We're losing you, Will. You going over a canyon?
Who can go in there? Imagine somebody who could inspire, who can pull up lyrics, whether they be Smash Mouth or Thumbawamba.
Or Italian rap.
Or Italian rap. You heard? Oh, yeah, of course. You heard me talking about my Italian rap.
I love...
And Duran Duran, by the way. Sorry, Duran Duran.
I love, like I was saying, I love origin stories and your story when you first arrived to Los Angeles. And so talk to us about the kind of... When you got here and you said you got an agent, was hoping to find a couple jobs, but like when did it start taking off? Was Two Girls and a Guy the first kind of big thing that kind of led to other things? And when did that chip kind of turn on in your head that's like, wait a minute, I have to leverage all of this right now in order to create a career of mine. You know what I mean?
Hang on a second. Yeah. You're conflating two separate jobs that he did. Two Girls and a Guy was something that he's trying to expunge. Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Joint. You're referencing a skin flick in Upper Saskatchewan that he's still running from. So we'll erase
two guys
that
and a girl.
From the
Sorry.
Record.
Two Guys and a Girl.
A skin flick.
I meant to say. So we currently have, we have four, total of four guys. How many pizza places do we have?
What the fuck was the question? Oh, two guys are growing a pizza place, yeah.
When you were on that show, is that when something clicked inside of you that said, you know, I have to figure this out so this doesn't go away, and it became this drive, this ambition that you have to... Because an actor is only, you know, we thrive on our next job. We're always looking for our next gig. And I know when I was on Will and Grace, I was like, okay, God, I'm on the show. I have to make sure I keep working now because that's what I've always wanted to do. I want to be an actor. So did that click in for you when you were on that show? Because you're so successful now in everything, in so many different areas. When did that start?
No, I didn't. I mean, well, thank you, but I never had any. I was the very fortunate beneficiary of having zero expectations. So when I moved to Los Angeles, I wanted to join the Groundlings. I didn't expect that I'd ever end up on a sitcom. And if I could get a... I remember when I went and met this little agency in Los Angeles called the Paul Kohner Agency. And
oh, yeah.
I said, if you just send me out on 5 auditions, I swear to God I will get one. 5 sitcoms, I said. And they said, okay, sure. And I was just bluffing. I didn't think I'd actually get one, but I ended up getting this one, Two Guys Going to Pizza Place. And I, my highest aspiration was to play the wacky neighbor, you know, on like a, what was the predecessor to the CW? It was the UPN network.
UPN,
I was hoping to get as the wacky neighbor on like the UPN network. That's where my expectation was. Right. And that's still a pretty, coming from where I came from, there's a pretty high expectation, you know? Yeah. So the fact that I got on that show and it was one of the lead roles, and then I just learned so much as I went. And I've always kind of maintained that sort of minimal expectation thing, which has served me really well, you know?
What was your state of mind? So you do Two Guys, a Girl, Pizza Place. They drop the Pizza Place. Obviously, a lot of meetings went into that. drop that, and it's just Two Guys, a Girl. And then that show ends after 4 years, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, 4.5 years. Yeah.
4.5 years. The show ends. It initially comes out, it's a huge hit. So it's a big hit, blah, blah, blah. And then shows happen, things happen. So then all of a sudden it's like 2000, I don't know, one or two or something when it ends, I think. I think I got that right. I've tracked your career for a long time, right? And so you find yourself, you're 2001, 2002, you're at Equinox a lot in Santa Monica, and I know because I see you. And you're there and you do, but you kind of shift. You do Van Wilder. Is that what it's called for Lampoon?
Right. Yep.
Definitely worth a rewatch, listener.
Yeah, so another movie that would like, it's not necessarily the greatest movie, but you're really good in, that you get a lot of accolades for. Like people, again, they point out, but what was your, where did you think you were headed coming off the show? It's a very tricky time in an actor's life, as you know, when you come off a show and kind of like what Sean is saying, you come off a show and you're like, oh shit, now what? What were you thinking? Did you, in your wildest dreams, think I'm going to become this
in your Van Wildest.
Yeah, right. Great, really nice, Sean.
Thanks,
thanks. Job, man. Really nice, great.
Yeah,
but what was that? What was that? Was it just day to day? Was it because you did Van Wilder and then you did these Blade movies where people were like, "Oh my God, this guy's like an action star as well." Did you have a plan for any of that, or were you just
no?
Could you have imagined that you would achieve the success?
Did you guys have plans?
No.
I don't know.
I was too dumb for a plan, but...
Me too. I was. My plan was to just keep this fucking heart beating. That was kind of it. I didn't... when I was doing movies, I was still looking for another TV show. Like, my real focus was on my father's son. Like, you know, lunch pail actor. Like, I need another, like, a job that I know will last.
Right.
This movie thing is stupid, you know?
Right. Right.
I was always looking for another show. I was always trying to get back into sitcom. I think I still am.
Well, but I'll bet you, I mean, you're too skilled and experienced now and clear on, I think, where you want to go and what you're capable of doing, that at some point you absorbed enough information and knowledge on a set to start to shape an appropriate and realistic kind of path for yourself. Like, you're clearly enjoying being an entrepreneur, a producer, a star, a writer. So at some point, it started to crystallize a bit for you what you were capable of doing and what your opportunities might be if you really applied yourself, dedicated yourself to it, and treated yourself to being worthy of it, you know, in the best sense of the word.
But I think everyone here on this podcast can relate. You know, nothing good was ever made without enthusiasm.
Sure.
And I think that when you are a fan, like a genuine fan of so many people, and you really absorb a lot of what these masters are doing, and I consider you guys all masters as well. I just, you know, you start to want to create your own thing, you know, and I just feel like that eventually I got to a place where I would say it wasn't until my mid-30s where I really understood that, like, you can't be great at something unless you're willing to be bad at it. Mm-hmm. And it just freed me in a way that, like, I don't think I'd ever experienced before. It really genuinely freed me up, and amazing things started happening. I mean, a movie I've been trying to get made for 10 years, Deadpool, finally gets made, and like that changes my life. And then we build sort of on that, and then I can start a marketing company and continue to tell stories. And I just, you know, I think it's important.
I will say, as a compliment to you, and you'd plug your ears if you don't want to hear it, but from working with you and knowing you, I know that enthusiasm/ambition comes not only from just wanting to to accomplish things with your life, but it really comes from an appreciation and a respect for the people that you work with and that you observe in this business. Like, you have a clear appreciation for the opportunity and access that you have and all of the work of the people around you. Like, you have a very clear sense that it is teamwork, this business. It's not solo stuff. And you're just, it's really admirable how
you seem pretty optimistic,
graceful you are with people that you work with. You're a kind leader. You get how hard people work around you.
Well, I love working with people. I love collaborating.
You've got great skin.
Beautiful skin.
Beautiful skin.
Thank you. Hydrated. Dewy skin. I sort of phrase it like that, but it's whatever.
It's very dewy.
Thank you to one of our new sponsors, My Mochi Ice Cream, for supporting the show. I just discovered cookies and cream, My Mochi Ice Cream, and I was going to say I'm a little obsessed, but I'm a lot obsessed. Do you not know what My Mochi Ice Cream is? Picture this. It's a perfect little scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream wrapped in the softest, sweetest dough known to mankind. My Mochi Ice Cream is sweet. It's chewy. It's cool. It's creamy all at the same time. It comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. That cookies and cream, I've always been a cookies and cream fan, but then when I had the My Mochi, oh my gosh, I mean, I was like, my mouthy loved it. First of all, an absolute knockout. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are gluten-free and about 90 calories each. You can find My Mochi at Target or go to mymochi.com to find your nearest grocery store. Discover the cool, creamy, joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today. We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8-plus acres. I got to keep it down because if my hens find out, they don't have 8-plus acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're going to go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. I just, as I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose Happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts. We get support from Canva. When your work, presentations, and docs look good, you look good. And you can design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform. It helps people design compelling visual content and is great for designing any type of presentation and great for any teammate. So our team at Smartless is using Canva when they're coming up with different design concepts for various things with related to Smartless and Smartless Media, because we have a lot of stuff going on. It's a busy crew, okay? And if it wasn't for Canva, they'd all be fired. Supercharge your work with AI-powered Canva presentations, docs, videos, and more. In just a few seconds, you can generate slides and text from a prompt. AI is built into Canva right where you work, so you can stay on task without any app switching. It's AI that's easy to learn and even easier to use. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva is perfect for any work task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
You know, I consider myself an optimistic person. As Downey always says, nobody wakes up in the morning happier to be himself more than you. And it's true. But you do seem like you're an optimistic guy and that you do have a great sort of positive look on life. And in any encounter I've ever had with you, it's never different. If I see you doing, you're in a movie or you're promoting something or you're talking on the street, you're the same guy. And you do exude that sort of positive energy. But are there things that get you down? Like, you must have things that sort of seep in. Like,
what pisses you off? What pisses you off?
Yeah, when does it get dark?
Right?
You know what pisses me off?
What pisses you off?
I mean, I have a patchwork quilt of pitch black night within me that is, you know, I mean, of course, we all have that. It's like a,
It keeps me warm at night. Yeah.
Yeah. You know that big hole with teeth in Star Wars? That is my soul.
No one's heard from Blake for over 48 hours, guys.
No. I ate her. gently braised, medium heat.
But to that point, right, I have like a question about this kind of motivation positivity thing, and it's about the Green Lantern, because now that I'm speaking to you, we, you know, it's so funny. I was in Atlanta shooting the Three Stooges movie. I go walk over to go
with
see
my friend Craig Bierko.
Craig Bierko's hilarious. I love him.
Yeah. Very funny person.
So I walk over to this mall on a day off to go see the Green Lantern. And when I walk into the mall to go see the Green Lantern, there's Jason Bateman and Ryan Reynolds shooting the change-up.
Oh, yeah.
And I in the middle of the...
Right.
Isn't that crazy?
That was the Phipps Plaza or Lennox?
Yeah, and Lennox, we were reshooting, I think.
I think you're right.
And I walked right in the middle of the scene. I was like, hey, what's up, guys? And you were like, oh, God, this idiot.
Yeah, I do, too.
And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going upstairs to watch your movie right now, The Green Lantern. You're like, good luck.
And I think I warned you. I said, don't do it.
Don't do it.
save your tickets.
Don't do it. I will hand you $12 plus popcorn.
You made kind of this, like you're doing now, a public admission that it didn't kind of maybe work out the way you had hoped, right? There's even that hilarious bit at the end of Deadpool where you have that script. It was so funny. So forget about, like, Hollywood for a second and share with us, like, how someone might be in a similar position somewhere in life professionally that was a part of something that didn't meet expectations or how they wanted. And so what was the drive or the path to say, okay, this didn't work, but we're going to go bigger and make the best thing more successfully? Was it something inside of you that said, I know I can make Deadpool, this role, successful. I'm going to try it again? Because a lot of people would have given up after something like that.
Well, you know, that's an...
Sorry, Ryan, just not to cut you off, but Sean's saying that Green Lantern was so bad, you should have quit. Go ahead.
Thank you for reading between the lines.
My entire inner monologue is a gigantic comedic nod right now. Yes, Sean. You know, I think, like, failing at starring in a gigantic comic book movie in the grand scheme of things is an extraordinarily uptown problem. Mm-hmm. So I think kind of, you know, reframing it a little bit like that, but then also...
But it's your life. Well, it's okay. It's your life.
It is. You know, everything's a little bit bigger when it's your life. And I, you know, at the time it really hurt because I realized that I let a lot of people down. It sort of felt like, you know, when it's you in the public discourse about that, everything feels much bigger than it actually is, you know? So I felt a little bit like I'd let people down. People really loved that character and I didn't love that feeling, you know, but I think what changed everything was finding a way to have gentle authorship in the work that I do, as opposed to that unilateral power, like walking into a room and saying, I'm the boss, this is how it's going to be, my way or the highway. It's really finding a way to truly collaborate with people. And the best leaders I know, and this applies to all forms of business and the arts, but the best leaders I know are the ones that are very, very comfortable saying, I don't know. So how can we get to a place where we know, can someone in this room show me or teach me? And those are great leaders. So I think harnessing some of those kinds of things, you know, basically grinding up 45 self-help books and snorting it like the biggest line of coke you've ever seen also kind of helped shape some of these points of view. But that was the thing that I think kind of changed my life. And then it allowed me to sort of take that energy around that particular movie and use it a little bit like judo, use this energy against it and kind of ramp. I mean, one of the great prides of my life was writing the tag on Deadpool 2 where Deadpool kills Ryan Reynolds while he's reading the script for Green Lantern. And I
that
just like
is so funny.
You know, it was like a lot of
so clever.
That kind of stuff is so fun to me, you know, to be able to do that.
So
and
good.
Also
it's
I think
so
well part of it what you're talking about is you don't and you never it seemingly never have taken yourself too seriously. And I think that's really important. It's a and people see it as armor. It's not really. It's actually kind of a great way to go through life. If you don't take yourself too seriously, then the slings and arrows don't hurt as much.
No, not at all.
And so and you have a healthy, and I think there's a very, you also have a very kind of Canadian outlook on life in certain ways. Certainly I identify with that, which is like, hey man, it's like you said, like it's an uptown problem. It's all kind of a gas. I mean, the fact that we're fucking doing it is hilarious.
Right. You're making a living at it. I mean, my father, if he were alive today, you know, he'd probably find some new way to die. But if he were alive today, he would, you know, dark humor. he would, you know, he'd be like, holy shit, you're living like the life of Riley here. Like, come on.
Yeah.
You know.
Sean, what would your dad say?
My dad would say, what's your name?
Yeah.
That's what my dad would say.
Over the sound of the departing car engine.
Oh, no. Sean's dad left when he was five.
Yeah.
Sean's dad left when he was five. And so it's a recurring joke on the show.
Yeah. My dad canceled Christmas one year. I'm not kidding. He said, Christmas is canceled. And it's just like, to this day, it still makes my brother and I fall over laughing.
What year did Blake and her little angel wings float down into your life? During what projects and how did that?
Hey man, don't say it so fucking creepily in that way.
Oh, she's such an angel.
Don't describe his wife as an angel
Will,
floating
straight
down.
From heaven. Straight from heaven.
Just say when did you meet Blake like a normal fucking
person.
But
I want to know what the wings flapping did for his life and his career. And then children, did it change anything or did it just complicate stuff and affect your overhead?
No. That's my overhead. This is the only fucking guy on earth who would look at a family as overhead. No.
I know, right? It's so true. Yes.
Where's the line item for daughter? No, I met Blake on the darkest crease in the anus of the universe called Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we were friends and buddies. And then about a year and a half later, we actually went out on a double date, but we were dating separate people.
Wow. Really?
She was doubling with someone else. Oh, got it.
Yeah, she went on a date with someone else. I was on a date with someone else. And we hung out and kind of, you know, we always kind of kept in touch, but sort of casually. And then next thing you know, she was going to Boston. I was going to Boston. So I was like, well, I'll ride with you. We got on the train and rode together. And then
it happened on
you know,
a train.
I was just begging her to sleep with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who made the first move? Was it you?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did that, let's get into that. What does a first move look like? I mean, is it like, and I've done this move actually in a movie theater where you put girls sitting next to you, you stretch out both arms, one over the back of her chair and one over the back of the empty chair next to you. So it looks like you're just relaxed. And then about 5 minutes later, you take the other arm down, you scratch your leg and you leave the one behind her up. Now I got my arm around her. So that was one of my first moves.
Wow.
This
is
like ninth grade stuff.
You're like the fucking Fonz.
Yeah, man. So was yours as good as that, or was
mine was much more elaborate. I mean, I would use a little bit of tear stick, so I get the tears kind of rolling, you know, coming out. You can gently sort of put it underneath your eyelids, and then I would tell a little sob story about my life and about my hardship, my Eastern Bloc hardship upbringing.
About how important your virginity is to you.
Yeah.
Did you use that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh my God! Of course.
Yeah.
Like as soon as I was in love, I was like, "Listen." We're not sleeping together, all right? It's not happening.
So you guys were friends. So how long after you started dating? So you're friends, then you start dating. How long were you guys like, this is it? This is the real deal? Pretty quick?
Honestly, it was kind of one of those silly sort of like out of a fairy tale. I was like a week later, I was like, we should buy a house together.
Nice. Wow.
And we did.
Because it was getting too expensive to drive back and forth. So it was really about the the bottom line, the overhead. It would just be more efficient to own a house together.
Yeah, we just, again, another, the overhead, right?
Same thing with me.
How long have you guys been together?
And then, you know.
How long have you guys been together?
We've been together almost 10 years.
Nice.
Yeah. That's like 45 years in Hollywood terms.
Yeah, sure is.
Two kids, yes?
Three.
Three.
Three daughters.
Wow.
Three daughters.
Yeah. Thanks, Bateman.
I know. Well, listen, you know.
You couldn't throw a little Google search in there while we were talking here?
No. Way to alienate Ryan.
Yeah.
Ryan, I want to ask you too something, about because I follow you on Instagram, and you posted something that was pretty awesome that I can relate to, which is anxiety. It's about anxiety.
Yes.
And you're open about the anxiety you have, and I'm pretty much open about the one I have. And this is your quote, which I love.
I have anxiety.
Yes, you do.
It says, to all those like me who overschedule, overthink, overwork, overworry, and over everything, please know you're not alone. I love that. Why? And see, that's what I was trying to get to before was, you do all of those things because, and is that you attribute all of those things, not attribute, but you associate all of those things with having anxiety? And if you associate anxiety with success, isn't it scary to get rid of it?
Well, that's the dangerous tightrope walk I think a lot of people are on, right? It's you know, I see anxiety as a, sort of a, you know, an engine in a way sometimes for creativity, but it also has its, like, you know, it's got its own sort of cloud and shroud of darkness. So I'm grateful for my anxiety, which has allowed me to kind of transmute it a little bit and make it useful, which I think is always great. But then, you know, there's a lot of insomnia associated. There's a lot of sleepless nights where you're laying awake overanalyzing everything, and it's very hard to turn one's brain off.
Right.
You know, so that's where you start to rely on other, you know, meditation and all kinds of other things, you know, just to kind of get yourself back to a centered place. But yeah, anxiety is something that, like, it's been with me my whole life. It's, you know, started as a kid, you know, being in a house that wasn't, you know, my household that I grew up in wasn't, you know, overly awful, I wouldn't say, in the grand scheme of things, certainly compared to some people. But my dad was never an easy person to be around. He was like a skin-covered landmine. Like, you just never knew when you were going to step on the wrong spot and he was just going to explode. So it creates a situation where, as a kid, you start to really try to predict the future. And I think predicting the future is a big brick in the wall of anxiety, which is, we cannot predict the future. So you're constantly living in this thing that may or may not happen, this place or this space that may or may not happen.
My God,
you know,
I so relate.
But then, in this business, you know, we all kind of tend to do that, right? We project into the future. What's it like to be this person? What's it like to, comedy's a little bit like that. It's a music, and it's, you're thinking, and how do I, you know, come 90 degrees to expectation in this moment? And that's, you know, it's all kind of born of that same thing, those wheels that just sort of don't shut off, you know?
Right. So, I think that anxiety, when you can't turn it off, when you can't turn your brain off, that is one form. And I know that Sean struggles with his anxiety because he can't turn his brain on. And that's often, and that gives him
cord,
a lot of...
my cord won't reach far enough to the outlet.
Right.
It's just, I walk a certain, like, if I walk anywhere further than 10 feet, the plug comes out of the wall.
Does this, will this thing ever go on? Will there ever be a thought? Listen, what's going on? You and Hugh Jackman are obviously in this huge beef, and... You guys have had some words.
Wait, fill me in. What happened?
Well, I guess he and
Hugh... That guy's going to be tap dancing in hell.
Yeah.
Promise you that. Yep.
I've seen a few posts, and it gets pretty real.
Yeah.
What's going
on?
What
happened? Who pissed somebody off?
You know, Hugh Jackman is... I really shouldn't say this, but he really is...
This is a family podcast, by the way, okay?
I know. He makes, like, kindness look like murder. I mean, he really is just the nicest guy you'd ever meet.
However,
it drives me nuts sometimes. No, there's no but, unfortunately. He really is the real deal.
You're questioning the sincerity of his kindness. No?
No, it's just, it's infuriating because I want to...
Because it's so real.
I got it.
No, I want to possess the sense of well-being that Hugh Jackman possesses. Yeah.
And it turns into anger for you.
I want to understand that to some degree. So we sometimes hate and lash out at the things that we cannot understand.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I tend to hate and lash out at Hugh. He does, he reciprocates, of course, because he's nothing if not a sportsman.
Yeah.
And and that's kind of it. But in reality, though, he is like my kind of life Sherpa. He's one of the best guys I know. I'm doing a film right now where it's a musical where I have to sing and dance, which is, for me, is like my actual version of hell.
What is it?
And a challenge.
Yeah, why would you do that? Are you supposed to be a bad singer and dancer?
No, I'm supposed to be pretty... I'm doing it with our friend of the court, Will Ferrell. We're in song and dance camp right now for the next month and a half.
God, he's the best, isn't
the
he?
Best.
So great.
Isn't he the best?
God. I'm like that Chris Farley sketch with him. I was like, remember when you were Neil Diamond in Songwriters and Storytellers?
Wait, you guys are doing a movie together? I'm going to be first in line for that. What is it called? Yeah. When's it coming out?
It's called Spirited, and it's a musical for Apple. And it has just been a real journey.
When Jason says he's first in line, he means first in line calling his publicist to get tickets for him and the kids to go to the premiere.
No, a link.
Streamed directly into your face. From
when does it get strummed?
Christmas. It's Christmas movie.
This Christmas?
Oh, no, next Christmas. We'll finish around Christmas.
2022.
Is there a Christmas theme to it?
Yeah. It's a Christmas musical. Yeah.
Wow. Original. You know, like who wrote the music?
Oh, here we go.
Pasek and Paul. Justin Paul and Benji Pasek.
Oh, they're fantastic.
La La Land and Greatest Showman and Evan Hansen. And they're just...
Yeah, they're amazing.
Oh, amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. Best songwriters ever.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, they wrote the songs for real singers. That's the problem.
Oh, okay.
So we're...
But you sing.
So how are you... How do you think it's going? Your camp? Are you... Do you want to fire yourself yet or not?
Oh, I would definitely... But I would fire myself from almost anything. Particularly fatherhood.
Not true.
So Ryan, what would our listener be surprised to learn that you do when you are not being philanthropic or a key member of the entertainment industry? What do you do to like McElhaney, me, and Will? We play a lot of golf. Do you do any of the golfing or?
Oh God!
What do you do to be an idiot?
I envy golf because it sounds so meditative, right?
It is.
Like you go out and you just walk.
Yeah, you walk.
You know, I will typically like when I'm in New York, when I'm at home, I'll go like I'll do like crazy walks. Like I'll go for 4 hours.
Yeah.
If I can.
Have you ever walked all the way around the island of Manhattan?
No, never that long. I'll go like from downtown to like the tip of Central Park, which is takes like 3 hours.
Wait, are you in New York now?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you lived there.
They're East Coasters. I love that you guys are East Coasters. Oh.
I am in Paul Bunyan's asshole right now.
I know where you are.
This is where I live.
Oh, wait. Have I seen this house? No, you moved, from the house I saw, right?
I don't think you've been here, no.
No, they had to change numbers and addresses. Sorry, Jason.
Right, well, what?
You don't even know how many kids he has. Why do you think he'd have you at the house?
Oh, and who's this little one?
Yeah.
Oh, is this the... Now, did
the
you have
are you here on a play
Ryan?
Date?
Was the third for like just like emergency harvestable organs, or did you want the third?
Jason turns to Blake and goes, Angel Wings, who is this little one? And she's like, don't call me fucking Angel Wings.
Did this third one give you a more favorable tax bracket? Is that why you...
Is that Amanda's name? Do you guys have like a... Is she Boo?
I don't think I've called her the same thing twice in 20 years.
Wow.
And my kids the same thing. It drives them
whatever
nuts.
It is, it works though.
I guess.
You know what's so funny? With Scotty, my husband Scotty, I think it's so awkward on sitcoms when characters call the other character by name over and over again. So because nobody does that in life. So I do it to Scotty. I always say, Scotty, do you want to grab something to eat tonight, Scotty? Scotty, I don't know because it's so unnatural.
Uh-huh. Blake always busts my balls about this because I can never just say, I did a movie this last year with Dwayne Johnson, but I always say Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Sure.
Like I go through the full, I mean, literally like the sun rises and sets before I can make it to the end of his full name. You know, like it's just, oh, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I'm doing a scene today with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. She's like, I understand. You could go with DJ, D, The Rock, the big
Rocky,
guy.
Dwayne. Yeah. But people in Boston do that. Have you ever noticed they go, matter of fact, Will, we were over there at, we're out in Dedham, Will. And Will, we seen the other guy there, Will. And you're like, stop using my name so much. You know what other, let's go through things that we hate that people say, like little pet peeves. Are we ready? Because I got another one loaded up.
Okay. Yeah. I can't imagine you have
watching fucking hockey these days.
Okay.
And I'm so, and not just hockey, but all sports announcers, stop saying without a doubt or without question. They constantly going, well, without question there, you know, the Leafs are, they're not, you know, fighting through the neutral zone. And without question,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think it's very common. People will start to say something and they'll just throw in the confirmational right in the middle of the thing. So, you know, when you're walking down the street, right, you're thinking about, know, how nice it is, right? And the right is getting very overused nowadays.
Ryan?
The one that just cripples me, though, is guy. Hey, guy. Hey, guy. Can I have a...
But we did that for years. Jason and I did it, and we used to... It's hey, in a few guy. Episodes of Arrested Development where we'll turn to each other and we'll go, hey, guy.
I've heard you just say that, Jason, in a comedy context. Because it's, I love it because it's like... you may as well just say, like, hey, penis hooked up to a life support system. What, you know, like, it's just so generic.
Did you ever see, Jason, what's that movie you did in the desert with Peter Berg and everybody?
Kingdom.
Kingdom. Jason has a role in Kingdom, and one of my favorite line readings of all time. They're speeding through the desert. And I remember seeing this in the theater with Krasinski, and you're speeding through the desert, and the guy's going way too fast, and Jason goes, hey, driver, are you late for something?
My character has anxiety. He doesn't like the speeding.
It's his throwaways, though, that, like, what's the one that kills? There's one that just fucking kills me. It'll come to me in a second.
I did change guy to gang recently.
Hey, gang.
I just like saying, gang. Even if it's a single person.
Yeah, I like saying gang.
We're going to want to.
Guns hot is the one I still use from the change up. When you, when Leslie Mann rolls over and it passes a little gas in the bed, and Jason, who's now me, my psyche's a date, but he goes, hey, you gonna come at me guns hot? Huh? We all say, Sean Levy says it. We all say it all the, I mean, literally all the time.
I gotta see that movie again. I really like that, I feel like.
I have not seen it since we saw it in La Quiñada or something. We saw
the movie you were in?
Well, yeah, I only saw it the once. You work on something for months, and then you just see it one time.
Sean, what do you hate that people say?
Yeah, what's yours, Sean?
Circle back. I hate circle back.
Circle back.
Yeah. Oh, circle back.
Circle back.
Hey, let us discuss, and we're going to circle back.
Or touch base.
Or per my previous email, why don't you just say I didn't fucking get back to you?
Yeah.
Why don't you do that with me on your text, per my previous text?
In anticipation of our conversation, please see the included,
dictated but not read. That's a little inside baseball. But mm-hmm.
Yeah. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a Challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartless. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell ya, of all guests we've had on Smartless, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye. Seps.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplish something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
and a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders,
balloonists,
bobsledders,
and big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Did you purposely not respond to Bateman because you're just like, fuck it, he doesn't deserve
it? Yeah, let's
it.
Get back to this. Yeah, now, here's what I'm going to say. Here's a generous interpretation of the series of events. I think it is, let's blame it on Apple. Apple sure. has a problem with texting. You cannot mark a text as unread. Because if you read a text and then you go, oh boy, I really want to give a good response to this person. It deserves my attention, a longer, but I don't have the time to do that right now. I'll do it later. There's no reminder that that text came in later and you could go months without responding to it and then seem, well, hurtful, I guess, you know, to the person who sent it to you.
It would be a kind thing of Apple to do is to allow us to do that.
It's a simple update.
I'm going to be completely honest with you right now.
Here it comes.
I got your text.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh. I wanted to be on the show. Here's the other thing, though. Uh-huh. This goes back to my little post yesterday. This goes back to the thing that we were talking about, is I get really, like, I turtle a little bit when it's stuff like that, where I'm getting around people that I greatly respect and admire, and this isn't me just pumping a bunch of hyperbole into your balloon nonsense.
Take it.
I'm telling you, I actually feel, so I get a little like, oh God, what is that? Like, I need to understand, I need to hear that podcast. And then I started to, then I fell in love with the podcast and
that made it worse.
This last time when you asked, you had someone on that was like, meh. And I was like, oh, then I can do this.
Yeah. Now I get it.
Who was it?
Makes
who
sense.
Was it?
It was not Tina Fey. I'll tell you that fucking much.
She drilled it. She drilled
it. She's good.
She doesn't miss a lot of things.
No, nobody was meh. It was just one of those things where I just wasn't the right time. I also found that the pandemic, and I realized that I'm not one of the millions and millions of people who are living at home paycheck to paycheck and living in an abject state of panic during a pandemic. I am one of the people who is not. I'm lucky. I'm fortunate. I'm able to not. But I was having that was a tough.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you're homeschooling kids, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this.
Yeah, how did they do?
They had a tough time, man. Yeah. I was like seeking out external help left, right. And so I was reading books. Yeah. I was like trying to figure out some way to steer the ship. So it was Blake was so much better at it than I was. Because I'm also a child.
But personally, when you have a creative mind and you go through a pandemic, it's hard to, and you're stuck at home. And I think maybe that's a little bit of what you're saying is like...
Yeah.
Did you start doing anything that you were surprised at? Did you start painting? Did you start whittling? Did you start working with clay?
No, I wish. I did a lot of writing. I started to like really make meditation a practice. I know that's like a little esoteric and everything, but it really did help.
How many times did you accidentally fall asleep? Because that's what happens with me. God, I've given up on it now.
Jason, if I had a baseline sense of well-being that you did, I would love to. I remember in the change-up, we would work together and be like, did you get your 14 hours? you got it all?
Granddad does know how to stay down pretty good.
The greedy little pig? You get it all? I would love to. I would fucking love to just get some uninterrupted sleep. That sounds great. No, meditating is not. I mean, my version of meditating is like sitting at a perfect right angle and in a silent scream.
Yeah.
Mouth
wide open, jaw unhinged. The mouth is so wide open. No sound coming
100%.
Out.
Yeah.
Ryan, where do you see so now you got these three kids, you got all this stuff, you're meditating, you're becoming a complete person. You're obviously drinking gin all day because you own a booze company.
Sure. Married to an angel.
Yeah. So you're married constantly half in the bag. You've got your little pretty little angel. Jesus Christ.
I will. He dragged you right into this smut puddle, didn't he?
I know. But where do you see yourself? I mean, it seems like everything you're doing now just is opening up. You're just hitting your stride now. Is there part of you that goes like, I've done a lot, I've accomplished a lot, and I just kind of want to slow it down and just chill? Or do you feel like, no, let's just keep rolling?
Constantly. I mean, I would assume that you guys feel the same way. You're always thinking like, oh, okay, next year I'll slow it down, you know. But the only reason I think I'm able to continue doing this at this way, I think, is that I'm present with my kids. yeah. and my wife. And my marriage is incredibly important to me, and that friendship is important to me. So I you know, I'm able to kind of get through, you know. But then Blake and I don't do movies at the same time, so she's ready to go back and do some. So I'll step down, and then, you know, we go back and forth.
You guys alternate.
Yeah, she'll do a film, and I'll just be, you know, with her on location, hanging with the kids.
So you take the kids with you on location always?
Always, yeah. We never have. But now they're 6, 4, and 1, so they're in school, so we can't really leave.
Yeah,
it starts to change when your kids, my older kids, are 10 and 12, and you start to say, like, you have to make decisions based on, and people know everywhere who have kids that you make decisions based on what works for your family.
My dad had the same philosophy, Ryan. Right. Take me with them wherever he goes. Oh wait, no, I'm kidding.
That's yeah. right. Well, yeah. Wait, you guys have Jason. I know you have 2 kids. Will, you have
3.
Three. So you have,
I have 3 boys.
And Sean, you have
1 dog.
1 dog. Okay.
Bless.
So,
yeah.
Did you guys ever? I never imagined to have 3.
Yeah, 3. Yeah.
Will, 3. That's that's
3 boys. But I have 10. They're 12, 10, and 1. My youngest just turned 1, and yeah, it's you know, it changes everything because everything is dictated. Everything starts there. That's your baseline. So it's. Mm-hmm. What works for the kids, it's everything. It's where you live, what you do, what jobs you take, what when you take holidays, it's all geared around.
But how different is 3 from 2, the jump from 2 to 3? I just, like, I was researching, like, a blowtorch vasectomy after the 3rd. I was
sure.
like, this is,
yeah.
there must be a way to stop. Oh, I know a way to stop this.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I've thought about it. Without getting, yeah, with, yes, I've also had that same thought. But then I also think, like, who am I to deprive the world just hear me out, you guys. Look, this shit is no fucking fluke, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, look at
so
you.
So why yeah. would I, why yeah. would I, What's, but it is
I
hard.
I do think that, though, sometimes when somebody I love and admire doesn't ever have kids, I think, oh, those amazing genes aren't.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Down.
Let me tell you something, though. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think that the reason why, one of the reasons why I don't have kids is because of some of these conversations that I've always been around, which is like, so tired. Yeah. Oh, kids. Oh, I have to figure it out. And so growing up, I was like, well, maybe there's something to that. Maybe.
It is true. The first year is garbage. Okay, everybody.
First year is tough. But I got to say, though, there's never a moment where
obviously
you're actually
it's worth it,
genuinely regretting it. Never. I mean, it's
of
the
course
best.
No,
no.
Of course not.
You can't imagine not. I can't remember not having kids now.
Right.
I will say, as a man who's 51 and had a child at 50, I was like, hey, guy, what the fuck were you doing?
Yeah. Hey, guy.
Are you stupid?
Yeah.
And you were out. You were out of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you threw yourself back in there, and guess what? Your chassis's not holding up.
Chassis is gross. I hate when you say that word. You know, I said this, Ryan, before on the podcast, but I read this quote a long time ago that said, from this woman who said, I'd rather regret not having kids than have them and regret it later. And that was kind of my philosophy.
Oh. Yeah,
well, you got to consider the source. Who the fuck was she? You know what I mean?
It's my mom.
Just
brim full of Sean. Sloshy hate.
Sean. No, I know, Sean. We've talked about it before a few times, and you've thrown that quote in my face to make me feel bad a bunch of times.
No, no. I've always wanted to want them.
When is the last time you and Scotty talked about it, though? I mean, come on.
Probably like a couple years ago.
Only us listening here.
Yeah,
2 years ago.
A couple years ago.
Will you guys talk
about
it again? Just take it up the flagpole again today over lunch or something.
It's awesome. I gotta say.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I want to make sure that I want to be there for them like my dad wasn't, right? So that's...
No, I know,
I know I would be like a great dad. I just make sure that I'm ready.
As somebody who's been friends with you for 20 years, I know that you would be so good at it. You and Scotty would be
incredible.
Oh my God, Sean.
Maybe I'll take one of yours.
Yes.
I'll take the kid. Sean, listen, if you don't like it, I'll take the kid. Because I did always want 3.
This is a great deal.
But I like the way, like, Gervais is always saying that, you know, there is that sort of pressure from people to, like, why is the ultimate thing not to have kids? And his thing is like, maybe that's just not for us.
I don't
share this, and it's totally, totally valid.
100%.
But you do get a great tax write-off if you have a kid.
Oh.
It's just so that you know.
Ryan, we've really monopolized your time, and you've got three so kids.
Nice. Hold on. I'm not ready yet.
Not ready yet. Okay.
I want to ask you each one thing, because you guys are all people that I, lesser and greater extents,
think less of now. Yeah.
Worship. I love you guys so much. I love your work. Likewise. What is your most fulfilling job that you've ever had? What is the one that you look back on? It doesn't have to be in show busy.
Sean Hayes, you go first.
Well, the most fulfilling job I've ever had is probably Will and Grace, of course. I mean, that happens to be the biggest job I've ever had, too. But
Bird in Flight on that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks. But speaking of anxiety, a lot of people thought, you know, I came in like a ferret on cocaine all the time as that character. And I think it's because of my anxiety. Because a lot of people are like, oh, you're so funny. You have so much energy. Because I have so much anxiety, and I put it into the character. So I was like,
And, but since the day you, like, burst through that door on the set, I could literally see you bursting through that door on that set. Yeah. It's just, it was, I just said it. I mean, it's like seeing a bird in flight. Like,
well,
it's
thanks. Like,
that guy's meant to do this.
Yes. Well, to answer your question, thank you for asking. It's very kind. Yes, probably that job. It happens to be the biggest one, but also just because of the ancillary effect it's had on the world, which was not, nobody could see that coming. It was just an incredible byproduct of what we were doing. So that's my answer.
Amazing.
Jason?
I would say, I don't know. I'm really deeply, deeply, deeply in love with directing right now. And so I would say the first film that I directed, Bad Words, was probably really exciting for me. That
shot by Ken Sang. One of the most pretty looking, funniest, charming fucking movies. I love it.
Will Arnett.
I would say Arrested Development me, because I've said this before. It's very rare where you guys know when you're working on something and it doesn't feel like work. I remember driving up every day to the lot on Fox and putting my pass on the thing, and they open up the gate and thinking, I'm so glad I'm here today.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly where I want to be. I can't wait to get in. I never had anxiety about doing scenes. I never had anxiety about any of it. I just couldn't wait for them to start rolling and start fucking around. I was like, I'm getting paid I've also said this on the show before once. I remember saying when I bought a nice place and saying to my dad, can you believe that fucking around? Because he obviously thought I just fucked around my whole life.
Yeah.
And I was like, turns out fucking around paid off.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it was truly such an amazing experience, and it was very, you know, it was so fulfilling, and there were so many great relationships, and it was seamless, and you know, Jason and I, that's where I met my little angel.
Yeah,
First fluttered into my life. Jason, and it's been a lifelong arrested.
I love you, Will.
I love you.
Ryan,
I love you too.
Your greatest, was it two girls and a guy?
Two guys and a girl.
Two girls and a guy.
Girls. Oh my God.
The show.
You just did it.
The show.
Did what I did.
So sorry. So go ahead.
Oh God. I did love doing a sick. I love two guys, a girl and a pizza. But I remember I worked with this guy named Danny Jacobson, who was the executive producer and writer. And I remember he came out and yelled at me one day because I was kind of holding back. I don't know if Will, if you can, you know, relate to this, but it was, you know, I felt I was very Canadian on stage. I was very like, oh, I got to make sure I'm not too much. I want to make sure everyone has their moment, you know? And he came out and he's just said, like, hey man, fucking take the stage. Take it. It's yours. It doesn't diminish anybody else's performance. Just fucking go out there and give it your all. And it really stuck with me. Take the stage. So I still think about that. But I would say that my most fulfilling job was probably Deadpool 1 and Deadpool 2, just because, like,
that's a great accomplishment.
It almost killed me. I mean, it was like a, you know, I was chewing and blowing bubbles with every aspect of it. And
I remember you talking about that years earlier and wanting to really be respectful and deliberate about how and when you do that. You know,
Yeah. I just learned so much, you know. It's just like being involved in the guts of a big movie. Like, it wasn't a big movie. We shot it on nothing, but
from the outside, it seems like that was a part in a movie and a thing that really was probably shifted everything for you. I can see how it
really did.
It was huge. Obviously, it was a huge hit.
And that genre, too.
But it wasn't just a huge hit. You were really good in it. It was really funny. It used everything that you're good at. And Look, you mentioned Canadian. You're from Vancouver. Do you still consider yourself Canadian?
Oh, big time.
Being from Vancouver?
Big time. I really do.
It still counts. So British Columbia counts as Canada,
what I mean.
Right?
It does,
despite this tricky two-country name. Yes, it is Canadian. Yeah.
Are you close to... I'm obviously joking, but do you still feel connected to your Canadian roots?
I really do, because I feel like Canada is like one of my parents in a way. It taught me to laugh at myself. It taught me to really kind of, you never take myself. I mean, it's one of the lines of Van Wilder: "Don't take life too seriously; you'll never get out alive."
Yeah,
but what is that? What is that? Will, you tell the story about the lobsters? It's a tricky spot. How does that go again?
I told it when Tina was on. I said the Canadian lobster fisherman and the American lobster fisherman are walking down the road, and one. The American says, "Aren't you? You got? Notice you don't have a lid on your lobster pot there, buddy. Aren't you worried about your lobsters getting out?" And the Canadian says, "No, these here are Canadian lobsters. One of them tries to get out, the other ones will pull them back down." and I always say, like, that's Canada.
It. I caught the Newfie accent there, though. The Newfoundland
pretty good, right?
Bay.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, everybody. I have to apologize to the people of Prince Edward Island because I made a joke on Colbert. And I just want them to know they're loved. Mm. And we really love you on the PEI, all four listeners to the Smartless podcast. And they're like, what? Yeah. We didn't know, and shut up, and we don't follow what you say, dude. But, you know, Ryan, you and I ought to do a tour of Canada, just like a coming home tour, and we'll just like a parade.
Absolutely. Let's get in the car.
Yeah, okay.
Let's get in Sean's Toyota Corolla and Let's see how far it. We can get. Before my Nissan Sentra takes over.
Let's do it. Let's do a tour of Canada and just a victory lap in Sean's
car. You guys
car.
Are going up there. You guys are
we
taking
are.
The podcast there.
We're doing the We're tour right. up there, yeah.
I know more about this fucking show than you three.
I know you do.
Rob Bennett and I have been working this shit behind the scenes like no one's business.
Ryan Reynolds, you are a man, a myth.
You're a prince.
I can't thank you enough for doing this. Love you. Love you like crazy.
Love you guys too. Yeah, thank you for having me. This was amazing for me.
It's been awesome having you. Thank you, Ryan. You're the best.
Thanks, guys.
And I never say that.
No, you don't.
He doesn't.
You
don't. I've never heard him say that.
Nope.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, pal.
Thanks, guys.
Take it easy. You. Have a great rest of the day.
You will.
Bye, Ryan.
Bye, guys.
God, I really like that, Ryan.
All you Canadians are so nice. Why is that?
When does it get dark? Is there going to be like a series of...
like September through April.
Uh-oh.
Really? It gets real dark. Yeah.
Does that coincide with hockey season or the opposite?
Yeah. Well, if it wasn't for hockey, forget it. It does get dark up there in the north. But you know what? The flip side is it gets really light.
It does seem, though, like every... Because I don't know Canada like you do, obviously, but it does seem like everybody that... is in the business of show, is always so grateful and upbeat and kind.
Yeah, there's no entitlement, which is
Well, no, I mean, we're so excited. I was talking to, you know, Sean and I, we were talking to Andrea Martin the other day, you know, who lived in Canada for a long time, and she's actually American, the brilliant Andrea Martin. And I was saying that, like, you know... Growing up in Canada, I moved down here because I knew that there was so much more opportunity down here. It's the same reason I'm sure that Ryan did. Like, you can, there's only so much that you can do, sort of. And Canada's such an amazing place. I knew so many funny, talented, incredible people who are from Canada who moved here because there's just more. It's just bigger and, you know, more people. And you get down here and you're like, I don't know. I guess you just kind of appreciate that, like, that you get to do this. I'm a kid from Toronto. As much as I sort of joke, I'm just a guy who grew up in Toronto. I have no showbiz connections.
But let me ask you something, Wilk, because when you came down, when you guys come down to this country, because on the outside, for me, it always seems like, well, because we live here, all just the kind of like the turbulent, you know, atmosphere that is now in the country, the divide, you know, you just turn on the news and all this stuff is happening. And it seems like... From the outside, Canada doesn't have, I'm sure you do, but on the outside, it just seems like Canada's just up, everybody's upbeat and happy and like good spirited.
There are a lot of issues, of course, anywhere you go, there are issues that are sort of germane to whatever place you go to, and Canada has its own issues as well. But there is a sense of like, you know, I don't know if it's a kind of a hangover from the sort of the English, like sort of a Commonwealth thing, which is just kind of... you know, keep calm and carry on idea of just like, yeah, shit happens and you just kind of keep going and you just don't, it's one of the things that I love / sort of push back against, which is like, don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah.
everything, keep it in perspective, guy.
And Ryan embodies that. Ryan embodies all of that.
Is Jason frozen or is he asleep?
Oh, it looks like...
No, this fucking conversation is just putting me to sleep.
Holy
what
shit.
What the are fuck you... are we talking about? Are we still on Canada? Holy shit.
I asked the question because Ryan seems to embody everything that Will is saying. Ryan,
oh
is
my God, he can't believe
things.
That you're
you know we're recording, right, guys? We're supposed to be wrapping up the Ryan episode.
What do you want to say?
I literally thought it was frozen.
What do you want to say about Ryan?
Finite number of minutes in my day to enjoy.
Fuck. Boy, you were really off somewhere, Jason.
He looked like he was fucking frozen. Like we were at the Madame Tussauds and here's the Jason Bateman.
That's what shock looks like. So, listen, this guy, Ryan Reynolds.
He's something else, isn't he?
Just a stunning man, a great friend, an incredible talent.
Is he getting more talented? Does it seem like it?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, he understands, I guess, you know, what his thing is. And he's like fine tuning and then putting it in other areas and you know, fucking slinging booze and buying.
We didn't even get to his mobile phone company that he owns.
I know.
He owns a fucking mobile phone company.
Yeah.
And you know when you call somebody on through his cellular phone, you start and end the conversation.
No, you cannot.
I don't even need a telescope
for
I can just see it coming right here. Go ahead.
Start the conversation by saying hi, but how do you end it?
Oh, you say
bye.
Smart.
If you like SmartLess, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.